Welcome to They Mostly Puttered at Night. Mostly, I am Salem, joined by my co-host Graveyard.
Hello.
This is episode 162. That's 162 of our weekly All Things Horror podcast. This week, we're taking a journey through some anthologies. I know at least one of these has a sequel. We're not doing that. We'll do that later. But right now, we're just doing the beginnings of. Well, I think it's just Creepshow, right?
The other ones. Creepshow. There's Creepshow 2 and 3,
right?
And then Trick or Treat is supposedly coming out in the next year or so. So maybe we'll save the rest of them for that.
Trick or Treat 2, or is it just Trick capital R Treat?
Trick or Treat 2 will be the next one. Yeah.
All right. So we're getting ready for October with an episode full of episodes, so we could get used to doing a lot of them, like we normally do. So we're diving in with Creepshow, Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, and Trick apostrophe R Treat. Trick or Treat. Not to be confused with all the other trick-or-treat movies out there. It's hard to find.
Yes, not the 1986 one, Trick or Treat. Yeah, so confusing. Yeah.
Well, there's a bunch of those. Like, I looked up trick-or-treat, and I got like 10 results, and none of them were the ones I was looking for. So I eventually found it. So we're starting off with Creepshow. I think just about everybody knows about Creepshow. So again, for these, since they're anthologies, we're going to break them out in their separate stories and then kind of just give you an overview on what they are. And then we'll not only give it an overall score, but we'll give it our best and worst of the anthology was. I guess Trick or Treat, we can still do that because it's not quite an anthology format, but
they're more interweaving without necessarily needing the wrapper. But yeah, we'll still separate it out.
Right. But there we go. But yeah, Creepshow fits nicely into that little thing. So we have the wraparound, which is in the beginning and the end of the film, which is Tom Atkins is yelling at his son for reading the Creepshow comic book because, you know, he's a kid and he's not wasting his time with that horror crap. So he gets a big slap across the face. And then, you know, the kid like goes to bed and then like the Creepshow like skeleton ghost thing like comes to his window and like winks at him.
Yes.
And that's it. And then it goes into the animated kind of intro thing. And then it starts with I call it Zombie Dad. I don't know what the actual name of it is. Father's Day. I guess that makes sense. Anyway, so it's like this old man dies, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like his family talks about like how awful he was.
Yeah.
Right? So like everybody's like, oh yeah, he's an awful, awful person. And the daughter killed him, but like everybody's kind of okay with it.
Yep.
because he was such a bastard and we all understand why, you know, she was like treated so badly by this guy. So, you know, she killed him and everybody's fine with it.
Well, I mean, essentially too, like he killed her fiance or husband.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, essentially the family's sitting around talking about it. The daughter, who is an old woman now, decides to go visit, you know, dad at his grave and essentially raises him from the dead somehow.
She forgot his cake.
Right. So he rises from the dead as a zombie that keeps screaming about Father's Day. Yeah, he wants cake. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he basically kills the whole family.
Yep.
Looking for his cake. Yep, and that's it.
Yep. I'll go through Meteor Shit, which is the Stephen King starring one. He's really the only person in there other than the doctor / scientist that's in there.
Daydreams about is not really even there.
And the best way to describe it is, this is like kind of my notes. It's the color out of space, but Stephen King.
Yeah, it's the color out of space, but like a more lighthearted.
Yeah, he is like the quintessential dumbass farmer that has the meteor. He's like, burns himself, starts sucking his fingers, like, I'm gonna throw water on this. I'm gonna go to the meteor school. They're giving me all the money for $100. He's gonna get all of his dreams come true. But lo and behold, he realized that the thing split open when he opened it up, and just fungus is growing amok. And we, you know, touched the meteorite, fungus starts growing on him, and eventually it overtakes his entire farm, his entire body, and he shoots himself.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Okay, so this other one is, I'm not entirely sure what the reasons for these things happening are, right? Anyway, it's Ted Danson is like a guy who I'm guessing was married to a woman, right?
He was having an affair with Leslie Nielsen's wife.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense then. That was the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought that he was like married to her. And I was like, so why is he so upset?
Because Leslie Nielsen's talking about what's his, and he takes care of what's his, and he's taking care of his wife and the lover.
Right. And I thought he meant like he was I thought it was his daughter, and he was taking care of him because of the daughter. And then I was really confused when the daughter was dying later. I'm like, why is he killing his own daughter? I guess I didn't pay I didn't pay attention. I was like, in the beginning, I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. So I guess that makes more sense. So Ted Danson is having an affair with his wife, with Leslie Nielsen's wife. And he basically brings him out to the beach, makes him dig a hole, makes him kneel down in the hole. He buries him up to his head. And then, he makes him watch, this ridiculously long extension cord, makes him watch, the video of the wife slowly drowning from the tide coming in.
Yeah.
And then after that, then he does that to him.
Mm-hmm.
So Ted Danson also dies from getting drowned in the tide. And then Leslie Nielsen is like celebrating at home, you know, like super happy about it. And then they both come back, Ted Danson and the wife both come back as like, mermaid zombies and, you know, and kill him.
Mm-hmm. In the same way.
Correct.
I can hold my breath forever. Yes. I'll let you talk about the next one, because I'll talk about the last one for you instead.
I can talk about it. I don't like to see it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. If you want to talk about it, I'll talk about it. So essentially the next one is the longest story, which is what most people think about when they think about Creepshow, the movie. And it's the crate, essentially. It's like an exposition crate from like 1893 or something like that. And essentially it's a small monster, really short, because it's not that big of a crate, but essentially like a Yeti that's somehow still alive and starts killing people on campus. And a guy who's married to Adrienne Barbeau is like, I hate her. She's a lush. She doesn't shut up. She makes fun of me. So I'm going to clean up this nest at the university where this crate was at and lure her in there to get eaten by this creature. And he's like, okay, I took care of it. Now I threw it at the bottom of a like filled up quarry. And like, it's fine. Everything's fine. But nope, it escapes the box. That's about it for that. But it's the most, it's the most like well-known creature from this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's meteor shit.
Oh, yeah.
This one are the two that I always remember.
Mm-hmm.
But then this last one is the reason why I don't watch this movie. I've seen it all the way through more than once. But it's not a movie that I ever think of going, oh, I should own this, or oh, I should watch that movie again. And it's essentially because, the last story is about a guy, like an old rich guy, who like, I guess does like hostile takeovers for a living, in the corporate world. And he is like a super germaphobe and is like, you know, pays all this money to have like his essentially apartment like hermetically sealed.
With, I gotta say though, the coolest tech for 1982.
Oh yeah. The garbage thing that sucks with the button or whatever that was. Yeah. Anyway, so bugs keep coming in and he keeps like killing them with his special bug spray, and they're fucking cockroaches and they're real.
Yep.
And then like he keeps, so he's like trying to deal with this one like deal that he's dealing with on the phone, and he's also trying to get the landlord to like send someone to kill the bugs in his apartment. Mm-hmm. And then essentially as he's talking to these people, more and more fucking bugs keep coming in until eventually they like take over the whole apartment and then like cover him and kill him. And then they like crawl into his body and then burrow out of his body.
Yeah.
yeah. And it's fucking terrifying. It's terrifying for me because these are live cockroaches, man.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fucking fake. They're not CGI. This is 1982. Yep. They did not have CGI cockroaches, and it's fucking terrifying because they're big. I don't like thinking about it. But this is why I don't watch this movie very
often. Yeah, it's the last segment. And I got to ask a question though. Do you feel like with this? I never did research on what people think. Do you feel like it's people getting revenge on him for him being a piece of shit?
I think it's either one or two things. One, I think it might be the both of them together. Mm-hmm. I think it's like karma is finally catching up to him, and it's not just like, oh, the karma is killing him. I think it's like he knows he's doing shitty, bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the final culmination of him like realizing that how shitty he is. And instead of just like showing him killing himself, they show this bug thing.
Like it's eating him from the inside.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And I get that because the subject is like there's a distraught wife that's calling because like the hour before that this takes place, the merger happened, the guy killed himself because of this, like he lost everything in this merger. And the guy's like, oh well, tough shit,
right?
I gotta grind my box of meal, whatever. I don't know what the hell that was that he put in the food processor to make it look like. It looked like cereal boxes, but looked like, gruel, essentially.
I don't know. There's bugs in them. When bugs happen, I, like, my mind blanks. Like, I don't, all I remember is the bugs.
Yeah. And then the last part of the wrapper is the Tom Savini and another garbage man show up, take the Creepshow comic, and like, oh, we can't get this voodoo doll. Why not? Well, because young Joe Hill, who's playing the son in this, is doing the voodoo doll to poor Tom Atkins. Sans mustache. That's the end of that.
Yep.
I mean, do you remember the first time you've seen this? Because I don't know if I remember the first time I saw this movie.
I mean, I know I saw it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, late 80s, probably. I might have seen the second one first. I think I saw the second one first, and then I came back and watched the first one.
Yeah, I mean, the second one, but we'll get to eventually, has some really good stories in it, too.
I remember the one that was, like, the big blob in the water.
Like the toxic inkwell blob? Yeah.
I remember that one.
The rat.
But I'm almost positive I saw that one before I saw this one, and then mm-hmm. I went back to watch this one. Like, I rented this one after I saw the second
one. Yeah. This may have been on like cable early 90s when like Tales of the Crypt was like hugely popular. It's just like, hey, look, this is essentially Tales from the Crypt, but movie form before Tales from the Crypt. That was probably the first time I saw it. And when the Creepshow 3, which I hated so much, like I think it was like 2007. I rewatched Creepshow 1 and 2, but it's probably been since 2007 since I watched Creepshow, which is sad because I really like the movie.
Again, I like most of it. And then the end hits and I'm like, I'm never going to watch this again.
Right. I mean, you could just skip the last 15 minutes and call it good.
Well, there's why bother watching it then?
True. So as you said, we are going to be going our best story and worst, weakest story in our opinions. Do you want me to go first with what I think the best one was?
Hey, sure.
Okay. Meteor Shit. I think.
You think that's the worst one?
No, best one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, that definitely the best one because it's so funny. It like Stephen King is like clearly probably coked out of his mind at this point in time. And
it's in 1982. So, yeah, probably.
Yeah. And it's so funny. Like he only says it once, but meteor shit. Just the way he says it, it's so iconic. And that's why I like it too, because it is a good, like I said, feels color out of space esque, but green. And so I think it's just, it's memorable. It's goofy in the right ways. That's why it's my best story. What about yours?
I'll go with the monster in a box. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, I can kind of feel that. I understand, like, being so tired of someone and just looking for any kind of out and not mm-hmm. knowing what to do. And then that opportunity comes up. I mean, he made the wrong choice, but I can understand that choice.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's the longest one out of all of them. I think it's the most fleshed out. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that happens in it that's not necessarily like very pertinent to the plot. And most of these other ones are very to the point. And that's the only one that really has like more stuff going on.
I feel like that one's about 30 minutes.
I don't know if it was that long, but it's definitely the longest one.
Yeah. And I can only guess what the worst one is for you.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we're going by which one I liked the least, of course it's the fucking bug one. If I'm going by weakest story, I'm probably mm-hmm. gonna say the zombie dad.
Yes, I completely agree with you. It's the zombie dad or Father's Day. It's just like, yeah, the guy's thing was he was just his can against the chair, screaming, "Where's my cake? It's Father's Day. Where's my cake?" And that's pretty much all he does in that one too. I agree. It is the weakest story.
Are you supposed to give your dad a cake on Father's Day or something?
I don't get cake on Father's Day. Maybe that's what I'm doing wrong. Maybe I'm not sitting smacking.
This is the modern age. This is the modern age. People don't get things anymore. I'm just saying, like in the classic world of Father's Day, was there like cake involved?
Maybe.
I don't wonder. That's just the thing I wonder about. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any highlights, low points overall for the movie?
Yes. I have a lot of notes because I had to like write down all the different stories and shit. Mm-hmm. I really like the comic presentation that they have, you know, like the kind of like in moving into the different scenes and stories and like showing them in comic form and then bringing them to life. I thought that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I really like that there's a story like directed by George Romero and written by Stephen King, which is cool. Well, the whole thing is this one is the whole thing.
Yeah.
Romero directed the whole thing and then King did the story. The Tales from the Dark Side is where there's only one of them, but mm-hmm. That's okay. I like seeing Tom Savini as a garbage man at the end.
Yep.
He does so many cameos.
Yeah.
Oh, he does a lot of cameos.
Mm-hmm.
He might give Planet Hard a run for his money.
But he always know it's him, too. So,
well, because he's got the same mustache and gut. Like, he's never changed his look in his entire career.
Correct.
That's all I got.
Yeah, Tom Atkins is fantastic. I thought it was hilarious having, like, essentially rip off Halloween music in the beginning of the movie. I thought it was funny. Like I said, the cast and crew overall, for most of me, like, phenomenal. Leslie Nielsen was great because you felt like, you know, I think by the time I saw this, I knew him for his comedy more than his serious work. And it was just interesting to see him kind of play the villain in that. As you said, the comic framing is fantastic. I will go into my low points here overall. Like, I didn't realize Ed Harris was ever young. You know,
he's not even that young in this one. No, like, he's already bald, so
yeah. But yeah, I put dancing at a gathering. No, thank you.
Well, yeah, I think Ed Harris's dance in this movie is like right up there with Crispin Glover's dance.
Yes,
you know, I mean, they're both just like, who the fuck taught you how to dance like that, and why did that get on film?
Yeah, and it's 1980, so it's still like disco and it's awful, and I would just never dance at a gathering like that. I would not want
1982 disco is already dead, dude. Come on now.
Yeah, I would not want an all white apartment ever. I would go insane, I feel.
Well, I mean, how else are you going to know it's a sterile environment?
That's true.
If you're making a film and you need a sterile environment, it has to be all white, period.
Yeah.
All white and then stainless steel countertops and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, trained cockroaches. It doesn't matter if they're trained or not. It's gross.
So nasty.
How about you?
Yeah, I mean, some of these are definitely better than others. Like, I feel like the zombie dad one, like, it was thrown in at the last minute. I thought it was a weird decision to put that one first. It's like all the rest of them, I think, are much stronger stories. Like, I think if they led off with any of the other ones and then this one came in later, like, it would have worked out better. Because you probably lost some people in the beginning. You're like, wow, this one's not very good. Okay. Adrian Barbeau drinks whiskey and milk.
Yep.
Like, she takes a fucking, like, glass, puts milk in it, and then pours fucking whiskey in it. What the fuck is that? Is that a thing?
I think that's called the vomiter.
I know. I was like, it looked fucking, I'm like, who the fuck does that? I've never even heard of that. It sounds absolutely disgusting.
She probably did it thinking that it's so much alcohol that this would be a base and help her stomach. Who knows?
Oh my God. I don't know. Like, I maybe it's just because I'm not a big fan of, like, milk, like straight milk. And it was like, I mean, I don't really like whiskey either. So, like, those things together, like, oh, it's gross. Maybe it is a thing.
It's Irish coffee without the coffee.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Maybe it's a thing that, I don't know. To me, it was absolutely disgusting. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like, I mean, of course, bugs are gross. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Too many cockroaches. That's the reason I don't watch this fucking movie. Bugs fucking burrowing out of a fucking body is like, that's like nightmares, dude. Like a nightmare hellscape. that is my gross. And I don't want to do
it
again.
At least it looks better than all the bees that came out of the guy and the monkey.
Well, yeah, those were so fake looking, it wasn't even like bothersome. You know what I mean? Like when they burrowed out, I guess it was kind of gross, but like again, you're so distracted by how bad the CGI is. Like there's no CGI, dude. These are real bugs. Mm-hmm. Like it was a fake body they burrowed out of, but it was like literally like fake skin and they fucking buried their way. Don't like it. That's it.
All right. So what are our olives for this episode?
I just did recycled zombies because there's like one in all these stories, essentially.
I mean, it's Romero, so you got it.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, there's recycled zombies in all of these. Every movie has some. Well, I guess like the Mummy's kind of a zombie.
I mean, it is. It's dead and comes back to life. So yeah,
right.
Maybe more like a golem, but sure. So do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
You can go first.
Okay, so to me, this is like one. This is damn near perfect anthology movie, because I said when they're done well, they are done really well, and I think this is the standard to meet. Is it a perfect one? No. Like I said, the Father's Day generally is not good. It's kind of boring and nonsensical, and you don't really care about anyone in it. Like I said, it's just I'd say the least memorable one of it. So I will still give this 9 recycled zombies out of 10. I love this movie to no end. How about you?
I'm not going to go that high simply because I can't watch it. But like taking the bugs out of it and just looking at it objectively, yeah, it is good. But I won't say it's great. Like I said, there are definitely some weak points in the armor there. But I'm going to go 7.75.
Okay.
All right. Now we're going to move on to Tales from the Dark Side, the movie from 1990, of which I saw one time, and it was in 1990. I really only remember the last story, and I really only remember it because Raydon Chong is in it. And at that time, in my kid mind, Raydon Chong was like the biggest name in this film. Obviously, that's incorrect, right? You watch it now, and you're like, she's like the last one on the list. But
I was watching my wife. She's like, "Who is that?" I'm like, "Ray Dong Chung." She's like, "I know everyone else except her."
At the time, yeah, everybody else was like, "I know who all these people are. Who the fuck is this?" I knew her because she was in Commando, mm-hmm. and Commando is like my favorite movie of this. Of this time period of like when I was a kid. So like she was in that movie. I was like, oh shit. It's Ray Dong Chung. Like, I don't remember anybody else being in this movie. Now I watch it like, holy shit, there's so many people in this. But yeah, at that time I did not know any of them. So,
Yep. I'll start with the wraparound. Take it away, buddy. Yeah. As you said, hungry, hungry Debbie, Debbie Harry, right? She is essentially kidnapped one of the Lawrence brothers to eat because she's a witch, and he stops her because he's going to read her from her favorite book, Tales from the Dark Side. And then we have intermixing of them as they're getting to the different stories, trying to prep him and all that stuff. And I'll say the end of the movie too, because it's the rapper. She instead goes into the comically large oven instead, and he escapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'll talk about that.
Oh, later. We'll get to that ending.
Yeah, talk about that later. Okay, so the first like actual story. Mm-hmm. Again, I know the actual names of these ones because they appeared on the screen.
Yes.
So like these, I do know the names of. Mm-hmm. So the first one is Lot 249, and this one has Julianne Moore, Steve Buscemi. I mean, big names in this one. Mm-hmm. But essentially, so we'll say like, I don't know, the guy who I don't really know is like the kind of, I don't know, kind of like your blonde asshole, right?
Silver Spoons.
Like college guy. Right, right. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know, your typical, like, you know, daddy gives me privilege. I can do whatever I want type of guy. He wins this big award scholarship thing. And he wins it, but he didn't even do it. His girlfriend, Julianne Moore, wrote this dissertation or whatever it is for him. And then Steve Buscemi was supposed to win it, but at the last minute he got accused of theft. And spoiler alert, Julianne Moore stole the thing that he was accused of stealing and then told the people that he was the one who stole it to like take him out of the running for this prize so that her boyfriend could win. So he gets Lot 249, which is essentially a big box with a fucking mummy in it. Right. So he like pulls a scroll out of the mummy's stomach and then reads the scroll and brings the mummy back to life, which then kills Julianne Moore and the blonde guy in retaliation for, you know, losing him his fellowship or whatever.
Well, essentially making him like fail at college.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, they purposely messed them up. And again, it wasn't even him that wrote it. It was Julianne Moore that wrote it. If she was the one in the, you know, getting the fellowship, that would be different, but she's not. So her brother is Christian Slater, Julianne Moore's brother. Mm-hmm. He gets upset that he killed everybody. So he goes and threatens Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi's like, okay, here's the scroll. You know, it only worked for that particular mummy. Like, you know, everything's done now. So he like burns the scroll and he's like, yeah, it'll never happen again. Like, get out of here. And then later on he was like, oh, haha, this is funny. Like when he's driving in, like, I don't know, the goth taxi. I don't know what they get chains all over. So he was like, oh, that's so funny. And he's like, what's so funny? And he's like, he didn't know the difference between, you know, whatever.
Seventh Dynasty. Yes.
Some goofy Egyptian thing and then some other Egyptian period, you know, porno mag or whatever. And he's like, ah, it's funny. And then, so then he like basically has this spell that can bring back mummies now.
And he does.
And he does. And that's it.
Yes, he brings back the two people died to go get Christian Slater.
Correct.
Yes. All right, next up is Cat from Hell. The, you know, because the first story is actually inspired by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. This one was written by Stephen King. Cat from Hell was essentially the black cat, let's call it what it is, you know, or two evil eyes, whatever you want to call it, that we've watched before. But essentially, there's a old rich people that are in charge of pharmaceuticals, and you know, they brought this cat, came in and starts kind of causing them all to die. The butler, the sisters, all that stuff. And so the last old guy, who was the uncle from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, hires a hitman to kill the cat, and he leaves to let the hitman do all the stuff. Hitman has his entire arsenal and just ends up just getting his ass handed to him by the cat. You know, his shirt's bleeding. He's going to, you know, tranquilize it. He's going to trap it. He tries to shoot it with a gun. None of it works. Eventually, the cat then sneaks up and just crawls inside his mouth and, you know, kills him from the inside. The old man comes back. Cat bursts out of him. He has a heart attack. He dies. End of movie. End of that segment.
Yeah. Well, there, yeah. Well, the hitman is Buster Poindexter, the guy from the New York Dolls. He's been in a whole bunch of stuff, but obviously he was big in the original punk scene, mm-hmm. the New York Dolls and stuff. But yeah, the only thing I remember about that story was the cat crawling out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly thought that was in Cat's Eye for some reason. I didn't remember it being in this movie.
There's a lot of cat themed movies around this time. So yes, it makes sense.
Right. But like in my mind, I knew that scene. I was like, oh shit, that's the movie this scene is in. I guess I assumed it was in Cat's Eye. Cause again, I've only seen this movie once. So
yeah. And last up, we have Lover's Vow.
Yes. So I have Lover's Vow, which is James Remar essentially is a artist, like a failed artist at this point in time. Mm-hmm. His agent leaves him. You know, he's not selling art anymore, so he got fired. So he goes to a bar, gets drunk, and then as he's leaving, the bar gets attacked by a gargoyle.
Mm-hmm.
Which kills the bartender guy and then scratches him across the chest and says, I'll let you live, but you can never tell anybody what happened here or what I look like. And he's like, okay, I promise. And then as he's going home, he meets up with Raydon Chung, who's like, you know, he tries to like hide her from the monster, and brings her home. And essentially she just like moves in and they have like happy family. Right. And then like, it fast forwards like 10 years later, they have two children. He's like a famous artist because she hooked him up with a new, you know, gallery person. His agent is back. He's rich and happy. And it's, you know, his life is great. And he decides that like, oh, I have everything that I need in life. Now I have to share my whole life with you. So I'm going to tell you the only secret that I've ever kept from you. And so he shows her this like action figure that he made of the gargoyle, and then she gets super mad at him and says, you promised, and then she turns into the gargoyle, like she was the gargoyle the whole time. Then his kids turn into gargoyles and he's like, oh no, and then the gargoyle grabs the children and flies away.
Yeah, she kills him because that's what he said. Yeah. and then they turn into just a stone statue on some place for some reason,
because it's a gargoyle.
Sure.
Did you ever see the show Gargoyles?
Yes.
Yeah, they turn into stone at night.
Yeah. But
yep.
Yep. It was an interesting thing, to say the least.
But yeah, whenever I thought of this movie, this is the only story that I can remember. Is this one. I don't remember the other ones at all. And I do remember the cat crawling out of his mouth, but I don't remember the other ones in any way.
Yeah, I remember Lot 249 more than anything else. But as soon as you know, Lover's Vow came on, I'm like, oh shit, she's the gargoyle. I'm like, that's right, now I remember. Like, I haven't thought about this movie in a very long time.
You know, I would think about it sometimes. I don't know why, but again, whenever I would think about it, it was always that last vignette. I was never any of the other ones. I don't remember them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just that one.
Yeah, so like I said, it's just interesting because, you know, I've debated getting the Tales from the Dark Side on Laserdisc for the volumes. And I have the movie, and I have Creepshow on it too, because I love the anthology stuff. But yeah, this is like, when I think of horror anthology, like I said, it's on my mind, but like I said, it's always Creepshow number one. This is really number two, because it's huge. It was huge, right? The show was huge. This should have been huge, but as you said, there's a planned sequel that just never happened, which is a shame. I would have loved to see more of stuff like this.
Well, I mean, apparently it was like far along. Like, they had scripts written. Like, there was another one that was written by King. It was going to be directed by George Romero. And the same guy who did the first one and this and the last one was apparently the main writer for the TV series. He had already written them, and they were already, the screenplays were ready, and they were like, I don't know if they had cast, but they were like ready to go. And because they originally got a green light, and then at the last minute they pulled it out from under them. So
yeah, I mean, this format was perfect for a lot of these Stephen King short stories that didn't need feature length films, quite honestly. Like, you know, The Boogeyman. It's a shame. But what was your the best story in your opinion of essentially three?
Well, I mean, there's four.
Yeah.
But the best one for me is going to be Lover's Vow, because that's the one that I remember. That's the one I think it had the coolest, like, fun effects and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to go with Lover's Vow.
Like I said, for me, I remember Lot 249 the most. Like I said, I had no idea. I completely forgot it was Steve Buscemi, though. Hands down forgot that. I don't think I knew who the hell he was at that point in time.
When I went to this movie, I had no idea who any of those people were. The only one I knew was Ray Don Chong, which is funny. Because if you watch this movie now, people would have know everybody else except for.
Yeah. But it's interesting. Like I said, the mummy was essentially, like I said, a golem that he was able to control. And I liked it. It was a good play on like silver spoons and stuff like that. And just assholes that people are in college. So I like it. I'm going to say the weakest story is definitely the wraparound.
Yeah.
Especially that fucking ending was stupid as hell.
Yeah. we'll talk about it.
What's your weakest story?
Yeah, I agree. It's the wraparound. I don't think there's a debate there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll kind of go with my highlights. I said the cast and crew, is, you know, same with the last one, the same three show. The cast and crew, everyone involved with this movie is just outstanding. You see all these names, you're going, holy shit, this should have been bigger than what it was.
Yeah, like I said, it was big when it came out because I knew about it and I rented it like as soon as it came out. But then like after that, it completely disappeared. Which happens if it's a movie is not great, but like this movie's pretty good.
Right.
So I don't know why it disappeared.
Yeah. And like I said, it Debbie Harris was good in it, but like I said, I just feel like she was underutilized in this movie.
My problems with it is not her involvement.
Yeah. Like I said, it's shorter with three smaller stories, not longer, but yeah, it's still pretty good. I don't feel like any of the stories outstayed their welcome, so I appreciate that. That's what I have. What are your kind of your highlights overall?
Overall, yeah, I mean, like the cast is great. We've already went over anybody who's in it, but yeah, there's a lot. there's a lot of people now. At the time, I didn't know. Cat from Hell is written by Stephen King, directed by Romero. Again, it kind of interesting because Creepshow, the whole movie was.
Yeah.
And this one, it's like just one piece. It's fun. And then, yeah, just Lover's Vow in general. I just really like that one. It's very memorable. And watching it again, I expected it to be bad, you know, because whenever you have like these, you know, kind of idyllic visions of what things were when you were a kid, and when you rewatch them as an adult, they're fucking terrible, and you hate them. I was really expecting that to happen. This is one of those movies I intentionally like time capsuled and didn't want to watch because I was afraid it was going to be bad, and I had this like positive, you know, energy in my head, like this is good. I don't want to ever think that it's bad, so I'm never going to watch it again. And this is the first time I've watched it since then. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was actually, it's probably better now than it was back then because I can appreciate who all the people and the performances are.
Right. Yeah. That's it. Going to your low points and overall.
The fucking music is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, they are. It is like this cheap ass, like Casio keyboard shit for the whole movie. It's like, it's not like there's different score for any of it. Like whoever scored this movie did it on a like a fucking Walmart brand.
It sounded keyboard. Like a very 90s family sitcom music.
Yeah, I'll give you that. with like occasional like trying to pretend like it's scary, but it's the music is so bad that it can't be.
Right.
The fucking kids acting.
Matthew Lawrence
was not great. I mean, better than some, but it was annoying as shit. And again, I just said, like, I don't understand what the fuck happened in the ending. Like, you ever see the movie Delirious with John Candy?
No.
Anyway, the movie is, I'll just get to the part. John Candy is a writer, and he eventually figures out that he can like write stories and they actually happen. Okay, that's the whole point of the film. It doesn't matter what the rest of the movie's about. That's the point that I'm getting. Is like, it felt like that. Like, the kid was like making up what his story was, and it was just happening that way.
Yep.
And like, if that was the case, why the fuck was he in there to begin with? Why didn't he just write that she opened the gate and let him out?
Yep.
I was very confused. I'm like, why? Like, why would you go this far with it if you can literally just, you know, make your way out of it? Because he's like, oh, he went in his pocket and he found marbles. He's saying it out loud.
Yep.
Went in his pocket, he found marbles. He threw it on the ground. She slipped and fell on the marbles and then stabbed herself with her own knife or whatever. Like, what? Again, it doesn't make any sense. It comes out of fucking nowhere, and it's just like, I don't know. It just kind of upsetting. It's a lame ending to the movie because that's how it ends.
Yep.
And like, I think the other stories are much better than that ending, and I think it deserves a better ending.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
I mean, of course, cats are evil.
All cats, but some cats definitely are.
This, I honestly feel like this was missing Savini for the gore. Because it wasn't like the first two weren't really good. There wasn't like any gore in Lot 249. Not a whole lot other than the cat part at the end. I mean, yes, the gargoyle busting out, they clearly spent all the money there.
Right. Yeah. It looked good.
Yeah. It was almost like the fly transformation, like a Cronenberg fly busting out human skin. But yes, that ending, I essentially says, it goes, remember, Are You Afraid of the Dark was already out and Goosebumps was starting to be a thing. It felt like a kid's Goosebumps horror ending. It was so bad.
Right. Again, just for this movie and the rest of everything, it just felt like a letdown.
Not for Masters of Fucking Horror.
Right.
The kid should have died. I'm sorry. The way that you write these stories, the kid would have died. Matthew Lawrence would have been eaten by Debbie Harris, and that would have been a better ending. I personally feel it's so out of place. It ruins the rapper, hands down.
Yeah.
That all being said, then, how many recycled zombies out of 10 do you give Tales from the Dark Side 1990?
Overall, I think I like it slightly more than Creepshow. So I'm going to give it an 8.
An 8?
Yeah.
I like Creepshow more. I don't know if it's just because I've watched it more. This isn't a bad movie. I will go down to an 8, though, for this, for Recycled Zombies. For sure. It's still good. I think you should watch it for what it is. And understand that there's still huge, huge names involved with this. And like I said, you know, VHS should have taken note by number 3 of what to do. Grant, they came back full swing. And I'm excited because we're going to have to do a catch-up episode because their new VHS Halloween is coming out soon.
Oh, is there? Are they doing it once a year now?
Yeah, October 3rd is
coming. I was going to say, they did one last year. They did one the year before.
Mm-hmm.
They've been really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope they continue that, but we'll see.
Well, we'll see if we don't get the stupid Hispanic skateboarders from hell fighting demons type shit again.
Well, that was viral. I think they realized they died, and I think they sold it to Shudder after that, and then Shudder's been doing it after that. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it died for a long while. We thought the entire franchise was...
Well, and again, the first one was great. The second one was good. Mm-hmm. And then the third one just like decided to do its own thing and completely failed. So they already had a winning formula in the first and second one. That's all you had to do is go back to that. And that's what they did. Like all the ones they've done since then have been just going back to the formula that worked.
I think they're stronger than ever. So,
well, I mean, yeah, very good. I hope it continues, but we'll see.
Yes. But last up, we have Trick or Treat 2007.
Right. I mean, like the story kind of goes all over the place. Like it's not like a separate vignettes. I'm just going to, we'll just talk about them like they are.
Yeah.
But in reality, they're really not. It's really, they're intertwined stories. Like some will do half the story, then do another story and then do the other half of the story. Some of them, it's like they're self-contained and their own little thing. And then, but then at the end they have like a crossover with another story. It's kind of all over the place, but I'm just going to kind of try to separate it into the vignettes here.
Yeah,
so
you essentially see everyone from other stories in every other story, at least a glimpse.
Right. Right. So like, I mean, it's, I guess it's kind of a wrapper because it's like the opening. And then that's it. We don't see like any addition to this till like the very end, and it's very short.
Correct.
Ending to it. So, but I call it Halloween Humbug. I don't know what the name of it is, but she's like it was like a man or woman coming home from a Halloween party. She's dressed as a robot. He's dressed as like, I don't know, like an old timey executioner or something. I don't know what that costume was. But she's like upset. She's like, okay, now we got to take all these decorations down. He's like, it's Halloween.
There's still like, fucking kids right
there. It's like, what do you mean we're taking it out now? And so, yeah, she was like, well, if you don't do it, I'm going to do it. And he's like, okay, fine. So he goes upstairs to watch porn while she decides to clean up all of the fucking Halloween decorations on Halloween.
Which, because if you looked at the decorations, it took them more than a day to put off.
No, shit. I was like, this is going to take you way more than just like an hour.
Yeah.
Like, you told him to go upstairs and watch porn. Like, I don't know what porn you're watching that you think is like 6 hours long or something.
Well, it was, no, she was going to take that short amount of time. They're going to watch porn together and have sex. She thought it was going to take that little time to take everything down. They went all out in their yard too. So,
well, I think she just told him to go upstairs and watch porn so she wouldn't have to deal with
it. Oh, maybe.
I think she was insinuating that there would be more involved, but I don't think that was the intention. Anyway, so she's taking down the decorations, and she essentially gets attacked and stabbed, and like you don't see what really happens because she's underneath a sheet, and there's like an explosion of blood, and then kids see it and scream and run away, and that's it.
So he comes out, pulls it off, sees her like head decapitated, torn apart. Yeah.
Right. Whatever. And then, like at the very end, we see who did it.
Yes. Spoilers. It's Sam. Sackboy.
Yeah, Halloween Sackboy. I don't know his fucking name. I call him Pumpkinhead.
Halloween Sackboy with Pumpkinhead underneath.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll go to the next one. Yeah. Principal from Hell, which was fantastic. It's essentially a guy who is principal who's still carving pumpkins on Halloween night. I wish we would stop perpetuating the people are carving pumpkins. End of Halloween. Stop it. Halloween. I'm looking at you. So he's like, okay. And there's this kid that's like stealing all the candy. He essentially poisons him. And we see that he's burying someone else in his backyard. And he has a couple of bodies down there. And he's a serial killer that just kills people on Halloween. He has a really annoying son that needs help carving the pumpkin just to get the eyes right because he can't do it. And it seems like he's maybe going to kill his son, but it turns out, nope, he's helping him carve the head of the kid that was stealing all the candy. And yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Happiness?
No.
It's a very fucked up movie. But it's a same kind of format where it's like an anthology format. There's like multiple different stories. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the actor who plays the principal also has one of the anthologies in that movie. And I thought they were like going to do the same thing. Cause I'm like, what the fuck? But anyway, in that movie, he is a dad who like poisons his son's friends.
Mm.
And then rapes them while they're asleep.
Huh.
And essentially at the end of it, he gets caught because one of the kids like suffers some kind of like infection and gets sick. And then they find out that like, he's all whatever torn up.
Yeah.
And then Like, they basically track it down to him, and then he's like getting in trouble at the end of the movie. But anyway, I thought it was going to be like that. I was like, what, that's the same character? Like, he's getting typecast? but then, of course, you know, I went a different way, and he just straight up killed the kid and whatever. But I thought it was going in that direction. I'm glad it didn't, but I thought it was going in that direction.
Mm-hmm. All right, take us through Werewolf Virginity.
Yeah, so we get Anna Paquin is hanging out with her like three other Disney princess friends. Mm-hmm. They're all dressed up for Halloween, and they're like obsessed with getting dates. And Anna Paquin is like, you know, I think we get like what, 2 minutes into it before, you know, it's insinuated that she's a virgin.
Yep.
And that she's like, you know, she wants her first time to be special or whatever. So they're all like trying to find dates. The other three just like pick up whatever random dude they see, like to get, you know, cashier at the gas station and like
newsman.
Some like news camera dudes. They're like, hey, you want to go out? They're like, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
so they like all jump in the van and leave. And then she's like, well, I'm going to stay here and look for my own date. And they're like, well, we can find you one. And she's like, no, I want to find my own. Mm-hmm. And then again, at this point, it cuts away. It goes to a different story, but we'll just fast forward through it. So she gets like attacked by like a vampire.
Yep.
A vampire wearing like an executioner's hood. and then she like runs into the woods and runs through the woods and eventually makes it like to the party. And she's like all covered in blood because she was bitten by a vampire. And then like the dude who was like a vampire, they like catch him. And it turns out to be the principal.
Yep.
And they take out his fake fangs. And he's like all of a sudden turns into this meek little whiny like, oh, don't hurt me.
Yeah, he's killed so many people.
Right. I'm just like, this doesn't feel right. But so she goes, oh, you know, be gentle. It's my first time. And then they all turn into werewolves. With a long kind of, you know, sexy, you know, disrobing of the skin into werewolves. And then her first time is not really sex time. It is murder time.
Yeah.
Because she hasn't murdered anyone with her werewolf teeth, mm-hmm. I guess. So they do that and then they howl at the moon and then they're done.
Yes. Yes. Then we have the, as you're saying, the bus massacre. Essentially, it's like 50 years ago that there's a bus driver that drove around a special needs bus and the parents paid him to kill all the kids. So he drives the bus into the quarry that, you know, the lake that's down there. Anyway, there's now kids that are going around and picking on Rhonda, who is special, and lure her down there just to scare her. Like, oh no, there's, you know, telling the story and like, aha, we pretend like we're all dead. And lo and behold, well, the kids do come back to life and start murdering them, and Rhonda escapes with her pumpkin. And yeah, and you know, we see her throughout there. She, you know, there's many, many theories as to why she lives. I'll get into that kind of at the end of this because I've seen this movie way too many times. And we turn out that the bus driver that killed all these kids is then the next door neighbor of the principal, who is then the old man in the last story.
I think she survived because she was the only one that didn't like fuck around.
Her candle was still lit in the pumpkin and she obeyed the laws and lore of Halloween.
Well, whatever. I'm just saying, like, the other kids went down there to fucking prank her,
mm-hmm.
and do like evil shit. Just like, I mean, I guess it's not a prank, but like the bus driver did evil shit to those kids. Mm-hmm. So like them doing evil shit to somebody else who just wants to have a good time on Halloween, they like come back to kill them. And I don't think they would have killed her at all, but
then they were going towards her, who knows. But
oh, they probably just wanted to shake her hand or something.
Probably. So take us through the mean old man, aka Brian Cox.
yeah. So we get Brian Cox, who like scares children away with his dog, like dressed up like a monster skeleton or whatever. And so, you know, he's like angry at the kids, but he still steals their candy anyway. Mm-hmm. And then goes in the house and goes to eat candy. And then he's like disgusted by one particular piece of candy. I don't know why. I was like, oh, is it poisoned or something? I was like, are they looping back to the principal? No, it's just not good candy, and that's all. So yeah, essentially, then the scene with him burying the kid in the backyard happens. You know, with the dog, blah blah. Comes back in the house, and essentially he gets this like little fucking ragdoll monster kid thing. Starts fucking with him and is then chasing him all around the house. It's like a slasher kind of. He finally manages to take the sack off his head, and it's like an evil pumpkin head child.
Yep.
So he manages to shoot it in the head, and it like explodes pumpkin guts everywhere. And he also shoots off its like hand, and it's got pumpkin guts. And then somehow it manages to like put itself back together.
Yeah.
But as they're fighting, he picks up the gross candy that he discarded before, and he kind of sort of gives it to him. Like, he tries to like hit him with it, I think.
No, he stabs him with his broken off Halloween jack-o'-lantern candy cane, stabs him like he's gonna stab him, and gets a piece of candy, so it's stuck to it. So it seems like he's given him the piece of candy, therefore abiding by the laws of Halloween, therefore spared by Sam, or so we think.
Right, so then he like gets up and leaves, and then that's when he goes across the street and kills that lady in the very first story. But then you know, he closes the door and he's like, "Ooh, that was close." And then you know at the door again, now it's the zombie children came back, and he was the bus driver.
Yep. And they kill him.
They kill him, whatever.
Yeah, like I said, I've seen this movie way too much, and essentially yes, there's evil people in this, but you could argue the werewolves for evil. But essentially, as long as you followed the lore of Halloween, Sam doesn't kill you. And if you don't obey the laws and lore of Halloween, he does kill you.
But he's only in two of the stories.
He's there in all of them. He's watching the quarry. He's watching the werewolves. He was at the principal's place.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't do anything.
No, correct. He always punches. He's essentially he's Sam Hain. That's why he's named Sam. He's the spirit of Halloween. So I've done way too much research on this movie. But yeah, this is your first time seeing this, though, right?
Correct.
I mean, what were your just first initial thoughts, especially in comparison to the last two anthologies?
It jumps all over the place. So, like, some of them are self-contained stories. Some of them go back and forth. I think it would probably be a stronger film if they just put it in the anthology format and just put it in the order so that you knew what was happening in those scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think the kind of jumping back and forth, oh, it's fun, but I think it makes for a more confusing movie. Especially when they're not like delineated in any way.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. Like I said, I could just, I know I watch this many, many times a year as this, but in my head, this is a good thing. And to me, it's very reminiscent of Creepshow, because it also kind of follows the comic format that Creepshow did too, right? You can see Michael Daughtry's love for it. He also did Krampus. He's doing this other one. He's also written some Godzilla stuff, but you can tell like he was a fan of the original Creepshow stuff. And I think this was his love letter to that style. And I guess if we had to pick the best stories or worst stories, I personally love the werewolf virginity one the most.
I mean, that's an easy win.
Is that yours as well?
I mean, yeah, Anna Paquin's in it, and there's like attractive lady werewolves, like doing, you know,
yeah,
lady werewolf stuff. And again, but it also has the kind of cool transformation scene set to Marilyn Manson, right? It fit well. It was done well. It was just an interesting story. But again, that's why I think it takes away from it, like cutting away and then cutting back. I mean, the only thing I don't like about that story is like why the principal is even there and why the principal is acting like a vampire. Like, he already killed a kid. Like, what the fuck is he doing now?
He just has different MOs for his murders, I guess. He kills kids with poison candy. He kills people other ways. And he likes to kill people by pretending to be a vampire. I don't know.
Well, I guess. I'm just saying, like, you know, when he killed that kid with the candy and shit, he was, like, very inept. Like, he was, like, didn't know what the fuck he was doing. It seemed like a kind of, like, spur of the moment type thing. But, like, at the end, obviously, he says, oh, we have another jack-o'-lantern. Like, the kid is expecting a human head.
Yeah.
So, obviously, he's done it before. He just seems like he's not good at it. And then, like, all of a sudden, he's, like, this vampire that's, like, really good at being a vampire. Like, I don't see that being the same dude.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the story because we love American Werewolf in London, Howling, and then American Werewolf in Paris, so CGI is bad, but this transformation was good. It was classic for the most part, I feel, for the transformations. That's why I really enjoy the story too.
I'm sure that's the only reason.
No, it's not. But, what is your weakest story?
I think the one that I liked the least was the bus massacre one.
Mm-hmm. With the kids.
Yeah, I felt like it kind of dragged on a bit too long. You know, like, I get it. Like, you tell the story of, like, what happened to the fucking kids, but they actually showed, like, the flashback what happened to the kids. I felt like that flashback went on for way too long. And then, like, they go through the whole, like, going down the elevator thing, and then, you know, they set up this big whole thing. Like, obviously the kid had red paint on his face. Like, it was not realistic looking at all. I get it, like, Rhonda was, like, you know, kind of neurodivergent, right? So, like, I guess, you know, she could be scared because she's socially awkward or what, I don't know. But yeah. I just thought it was the weakest one.
I mean, I agree, because fuck bullies.
Well, I mean, they're good for scary antagonists.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they did it. I will give the movie kudos for, you know, killing kids, but it's still a rarity in the most part. But yeah, it's just their story, their scare tactic. Like, okay, cool, you're gonna scare this girl. What are you, like, what's the point? I don't get the point of that, other than being assholes. But yeah. Yeah, and then I'll guess you can go with your overall highlights.
Overall, I really liked the intro.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was really fun, like the opening credit crawl, you know, with the kind of comic stuff and animation. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that werewolf transformation scene with the Manson soundtrack was great. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it very much. I mean, I like the how the story's intertwined, right? Yeah. It's rare for an anthology to do that. Usually it's very clear vignettes, very clear delineations between the stories, and there's no relationship between the stories other than, like, you know, like Cat's Eye, there's a fucking cat involved in all of them. You know what I mean? But it's usually something thin like that. It's not like, you know, major characters going between them. I know I said earlier I thought it would be a better movie if they didn't, and it probably would be. But I'm just saying, it's just interesting that they did it in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Not normally done. That's all I got.
Oh, yeah. I thoroughly enjoy the interwoven stories. It's amazingly well done. Like, as you said, anthologies don't typically do it, and when they do, it's generally not very good, I would say. I can't, there's a couple that are like that, but I can't think off the top of my head, but I think this does it really well. I think that it works when it's kind of written all by the same guy, and just having the idea of this, like, this town that loves Halloween that much, right? Because, you know, it was, what, 10 o'clock at night, and there are still kids fucking everywhere.
Well, it was very strange, right? Because it's, like, super dark, mm-hmm. like midnight. The people are coming home from a Halloween party,
mm-hmm.
and there's still kids out trick-or-treating, which means it's, like, 7 o'clock. And, like, why are you coming home from a Halloween party at, like, 7 p.m.?
Well, it's probably because he was just that plastered. He's like, okay, you're done.
I don't know. He didn't seem drunk at all.
No.
No. And then again, like the whole him killing the fucking kid and then doing the jack-o'-lantern was before the vampire thing. Like, how did he have enough time to do all that in one night?
Yeah, that's true.
Just again, like the time is very loose in this movie.
Yeah. Like I said, the rules of Halloween kind of explain what happens and why we have these rules of Halloween. What happens if you break them? Because people kind of forgot. I like that part. The cast is stacked. There's a lot of big name people, especially for 2007, early 2005 when this came out. We have Timoa, you know, Pinkett from Battlestar Galactica. We have Leslie Bibb. We have Brian Cox. We have, you know, the principal. We have Anna Paquin. It's an interesting cast. I think it works well. And I am a sucker for Smokey Eye. And I think this the best Anna Paquin's ever looked with her smoky eyes. But, you know, that's me.
You say so.
Really, the downside for me is kids are assholes. And as I said, it's, I don't think there's necessarily like a weak story. I think it just kind of all ties in really well. And, you know, waited 2 years for this to come out after it came out. Now we're waiting, I mean, we 18 years for the sequel that's maybe finally happening. I just, it kind of went under the radar and it's only now becoming popular. Like, now you can start seeing Sam stuff. I say only in the past like year or two, Sam stuff everywhere, like at Spirit Halloween, stuff like that. It just took a long time for it to get, like, traction, like Creepshow and Tales from the Dark Side. I don't know why.
But yeah, I don't know. It didn't get very big. I mean, I think I saw merch from that movie a long time ago. I just didn't know what it was.
But I said it's now slowly becoming more part of the mainstream cult honor. I think it's after like he started doing like the Godzilla stuff that people like realized his name and his work, then they started going back in his, you know, his catalog and started to find it. But yeah, it took a long time for it to gain traction. What kind of your overall low points?
That puking scene, man.
With all the chocolate.
Holy crap. Like, stop with the puke. Like, he kept doing it. And then, like, when the kid was passed out, he brought him in the house and he was, like, puking all over him again. I'm like, come on, dude. Just gross. Yeah, again, the principal is, like, all about, you know, murdering this kid very badly, then carving his head up. Then he somehow becomes, like, an amateur vampire. And then he turns into, like, this little mousy, meek guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, please don't hurt me. Like, who the fuck are you? Like, how many personalities do you have?
Yeah, that's true.
I just thought that was annoying. The stupid fucking ragdoll thing. I know you said his name is Sam, but I'm going to call him the stupid fucking ragdoll thing with his Halloween magic and his pumpkin head. I thought it was fucking annoying. Again, like, yeah, he shows up in the stories, but he doesn't do anything. He only really does something at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought it was weak. Brian Cox is breathing during his
vignette. He's wheezing. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like, dude, I get it. Like, you can stop now. I mean, he's probably deep into the role. I get it. But, like, stop. Mm-hmm. It's very quiet. All I can hear is you, like, wheezing. It's like, and again, he has a double barrel shotgun that he shoots at least 5 times before he reloads it.
Of course.
Double barrel is called a double barrel because it has two barrels. So you can't shoot more than 2 times with a double barrel shotgun. But yeah, I counted. He shoots at least 5 times before reloading. That's all I got.
All right, cool. You want me to go first with my olives?
Hey, sure.
Yeah, 9.25.
9.25.
I unabashedly love this movie to no end. Honestly, it's the only movie that was on this episode that the wife is like, oh yeah, I'll watch that with you. Cause we watch it. So we've watched it every year since it came out. So it's just now a tradition at our house. How about you?
And that's okay. I don't know. I mean, like, had some fun parts, but I don't think it was like amazing. So I'd do like 7.
7?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. All right.
Anything else you want to add?
No, take us home.
All right. So yes, it's finally here. Spooky time is upon us. It's October. It's 2025. So of course we're going to watch way too many fucking movies and get burned out because that's what we do. So this month, well, I guess not the whole month, but theme wise, month. Sure. Yeah. So we're celebrating The Godfather, the Modern Zombie with George Romero. His other works and all the spinoffs, remakes, and other properties made because of the rights issues. Interesting enough. I still love that story. It's such a weird story.
It sure is.
We'll tell it next week. But yeah, first up is the classic of the dead trilogy. Of course, that's the Night of the Walking Dead. Right?
Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah. So, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead, the original.
Yes.
And then I know there's 3 more after that. Mm-hmm. There's Dire of the Dead. Oh, no, Land of the Dead, Dire of the Dead, Survival of the Dead.
Yep.
I believe I've only seen Survival of the Dead once.
I've seen all the new 3 only once as well.
I think Dire of the Dead I saw a couple of times. I think I own it.
Land of the Dead I've watched more than the other ones.
Land of the Dead I've watched a couple of times. I'm not a big fan of it, but I have seen it a couple of times. The first 3 I've seen, I don't know, a shit ton of times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't even know how many. Night of the Living Dead, if you count like the times it's in other movies, I've probably seen it like 3 times just from that.
I mean, how many times have we downloaded it for our day jobs? Because it's easy to do. It's
perfect. Yeah, there's no copyright. You can do whatever you want with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I used to test Sans with that. Yeah, but yeah, so that's what we're doing to start off October, and then we're doing all kinds of other of the deads and remakes and all that fun stuff. I think we're even doing other Romero movies that are not part of that, right?
Yes, we're doing other Romero's, not the dead, the Romero remakes, the other of the dead, so like Return of the Living Dead, Hell of the Living Dead, City of the Living Dead, and then, well, we have to finish it off with a Night of the Demons finishing of the franchise.
Well, the sequels of Night of the, because we did the first one already. Mm-hmm. It's a shame, because I really like the first one. I don't think that sequels are going to live up to the first one.
Have you seen any of them?
The sequels? No.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get to it. I don't want to spoil anything.
Well, again, horror sequels of that era were not good. So I'm not going in with high hopes. We'll see. We'll get there.
If you like a washed out, burnt out Ed Furlong, you'll love the remake of Night of the Demons.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So remember, we watch bad movies, so you don't have to.
And this has been Graveyard Saying, have you checked on the children?
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.
Good night.